I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Belgian police have released a photo of a wanted suspect in Tuesday's triple terrorist bombings at the Brussels airport and a subway station that killed at least 34 and wounded more than 200.
Le troisième suspect, vêtu d'une veste claire et portant
Belgian
un chapeau,
federal prosecutor Frederick Van Leeuw said the suspect was wearing a light jacket and hat. He said the man put down a large bag, then left before an explosion. The photo was taken from closed-circuit television showing a man alongside two others who are believed to have been suicide bombers. Police also say they found a bomb, chemicals, and an Islamic State flag in a raid on a house in Brussels. The IS group has claimed responsibility for Tuesday's carnage. Two bombs went off at the airport, and a suicide bomber blew himself up about an hour later at the Malbec subway station near European Union headquarters. In Argentina Wednesday, President Obama joined his Argentine counterpart Mauricio Macri in standing in solidarity with Belgium.
We understand the pain they feel viscerally because our countries as well have known the scourge of terrorism.
The U.S. has issued a travel warning to Americans throughout Europe, warning them to use caution at sporting events, tourist sites, restaurants, and on transportation. It advised taking particular care at large festivals on religious holidays. The International Criminal Court Wednesday ordered a senior member of the Lord's Resistance Army to stand trial for crimes committed in Uganda. Dominic Ongwen faces 70 charges, including murder, rape, torture, and recruitment of child soldiers. Ongwen, who surrendered last year, is the only senior LRA member in the court's custody. The militia leader's elusive leader, Joseph Kony, remains at large. This is VOA News. The parties to the conflict in Yemen have agreed to a cessation of hostilities and a new round of peace talks next month. UN Special Envoy Ismail Ould Sheikh Ahmed said Wednesday the truce will begin at midnight local time, April 10th.
I am pleased to announce today that parties to the conflict have agreed to a nationwide cessation of hostilities beginning at midnight on the 10th of April. In advance of the upcoming round of the peace talks, which will take place on the 18th of April in Kuwait.
He said the talks would be based on UN Security Council resolutions, which call for resolving the year-old conflict through political negotiation. More than 6,000 have been killed since a Saudi-led coalition began airstrikes a year ago in support of President Abdrabbu Mansour Hadi, who flew to Riyadh after Iranian-backed Shia Houthi rebels seized the capital Sana'a in 2014. President Obama met Wednesday with Argentina's new leader, Mauricio Macri, at the start of a two-day official visit, the first bilateral visit to Buenos Aires by a U.S. leader in nearly 20 years. Mr. Obama held a joint news conference following their talks. Mr. Macri, who spoke through an interpreter, talked about his hopes for the bilateral relationship.
This visit, Mr. President, has a special meaning for us. We see it as a gesture of affection, friendship, at a time when Argentina is embarking towards a new horizon.
President Macri, who took office in December after a decade of leftist rule, has signaled he wants stronger ties with Washington and other free market economies. The president's visit coincides with the 40th anniversary of a military coup supported by the U.S. Mr. Obama acknowledged U.S. relations with Latin America's dictatorships in the 1970s damaged its image, but he said he hopes the release of long-classified documents about Argentina's so-called dirty war will rebuild trust. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Moscow for talks with President Vladimir Putin and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on Syria and Ukraine. A U.S. official traveling with Mr. Kerry said he wants to hear how they view the current status of efforts toward a political transition away from Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. The official made clear the U.S. position remains Mr. Assad must step down in order for there to be a viable path to peace after 5 years of conflict. UN envoy to Libya Martin Kobler says he's been denied permission to travel to Tripoli for a mission to pave the way for a UN-backed unity government to move from Tunis. He's been pressing Libya's rival administrations, one in the West, the other in the East, to accept the unity government created from a December agreement. A South African man found what may be a piece of the missing Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. Authorities will examine the debris to determine its origin. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 24th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's foreign minister has been relieved of his post. The U.S. helps Cameroon beef up its airport security. South African President Jacob Zuma is under investigation for influence peddling. Zanzibar's president is being sworn in today after winning a second five-year term. And members of Tanzania's parliamentary committee resign over corruption allegations. And we'll tell you why President Mugabe's cabinet has ordered all foreign-owned companies to close by April 1st this year. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's foreign minister has confirmed that he has been relieved of his post as foreign minister. Barnaba Morab Benjamin says the decision was made Thursday through a decree issued by President Salva Kiir Mayardit. But he said he will continue to be a committed member of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement Party, as well as a member of parliament. Benjamin denies he was fired because he had said that the oil-rich region of Abyei was not a part of South Sudan. He said he supports the Abyei Protocol, which says that the status of the region should be decided by the Ngok, Dinka, and Meseria tribes of the region through a referendum whether they want to be a part of South Sudan or Sudan.
Appreciate the confidence that he has placed in me for the last 3 years as the Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Affairs. So I've been relieved. But I'm still a Member of Parliament representing my constituency in the National Assembly.
Can you tell us, Mr. Minister, why you think you were relieved of your post?
You know, politicians have the various reasons why sometimes they can be relieved of their duties. We had a problem of a report on the issue of the people of Abyei, in which it was erroneously said that indicated the Dinka Ngok of Abyei are Sudanese, and so there was a lot of complaint from our citizens of Abyei. That incident, they felt that why was that mistake done? But otherwise, I think all in all, I will continue as a politician to support my brothers and sisters from Abyei and the people of South Sudan, and I'll continue to play that role.
One of the articles I read in the Sudan Tribune is that you said that Abyei was not a part of South Sudan. And so in that way, the article suggests that you conceded Abyei to the government in Khartoum. Did you say that?
No, that is not true. Sudan Tribune will always say something opposite. Opposition, as I articulate as the foreign minister of Japan, is that Abyei has joint sovereignty for the Republic of South Sudan and the Republic of Sudan. And that's why the Abyei Protocol said that there should be the right of self-determination through a referendum by the nine Ngok Dinka chiefdom to choose whether they go back to South Sudan, where they originally were, or remain a part of the Sudan. And because that referendum would be decision by the people, by the Ngok Dinka of Abyei, it is what the Republic of South Sudan will support. And that's what I support. But I have never said in any way whatsoever that I have conceded Abyei to be a part of the Sudan.
Mr. Minister, there are more serious other issues that South Sudan has to deal with now, which is the implementation of the peace agreement that was signed last year. Do you think the issue of Abyei should come forefront at this moment?
Well, the issue of Abyei will always be in the forefront, no doubt about that. And as you know, it is being handled by former President Mbeki through the African Union High Implementation Panel. So there's no question, but the peace process will have to go ahead. The implementation process has to go ahead, and that's why we're still asking Dr. Riek really to come so that the transitional government of national unity can be formed.
And you will continue to play your role as a member of parliament and not as foreign minister or not as an official of the South Sudan government?
I will be a member of parliament in the National Assembly of the Republic of South Sudan. I'm also a member of the National Liberation Council of the political party, the ruling party, that is the SPLM. So you can rest assured I'll continue to play my role, both in parliament and in the party.
Barnaba Morab Benjamin is the now former foreign minister of South Sudan. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Tensions continue to simmer on the popular tourist island of Zanzibar, where Ali Mohamed Shein will be sworn in today, Thursday, for a second five-year term as president of the semi-autonomous island of Tanzania. Shein won 91% of the vote in last Sunday's rerun election. The first poll held last October was annulled by the Electoral Commission, citing massive irregularities. The main opposition Civic United Front Party claims it won the October election and chose to boycott last weekend's elections. As Wiley Lowry reports from Zanzibar, the CUF party says it will not be represented in the new government, leaving many to wonder what will happen next.
The narrow, winding alleyways of Stone Town are slowly coming back to life. Shops are opened and tourists wander through the ancient city. For 5 months, the islands have been in political limbo. But after this week's re-election, many hope that's over. Hatib Abdullah owns a small shop on Harumzi Street in the heart of Stone Town.
I'm happy because they're finishing these things and we can look after 5 years, I think, 2020 again for like this way. But now we are already finished. If we are happy, if you not happy, anything happen, you are not to accept to be a normal good and to be work like before.
The Zanzibar Electoral Commission says 67% of eligible voters cast ballots, and Ali Mohamed Shein won in a landslide. But there were very few international monitors there to watch the vote, and the opposition party says the numbers are not accurate. Nazar Masri speaks for the opposition party.
The number are cooked. Even the votes are cooked. But there's no way that Dr. Shein, who got only 170,000 votes 5 months back, staying in the office illegal for 5 months and gaining 120,000 votes more without campaign, without anything. This is unbelievable.
The ruling party CCM seems determined to form a new government, and right now it doesn't look like the CUF will have a part in it. Masri says that's fine by the CUF.
We say that we're not going to support this government. We're not going to participate in anything in this government. We are going to build a party. We are going to build a political stability and political strength of our party.
Meanwhile, Masri is urging CUF supporters to remain calm and to refrain from protesting. Willie Lowry for VOA News in Zanzibar.
Some members of Tanzania's Parliamentary Committee on Social Services have resigned and petitioned the Speaker of Parliament to launch a thorough investigation into allegations that certain lawmakers solicited bribes from state-run enterprises. A majority of the accused lawmakers are members of the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi CCM party of President John Magufuli. Some Tanzanians say the allegations, if proven to be true, undermine ongoing efforts by President John Magufuli to combat corruption in public institutions. But Government Information Minister Nape Nnauye tells reporter Peter Clotty that parliament members he contacted denied taking any bribes.
So yesterday, late in the evening, I met some of the members of parliament who have taken the step of resigning, writing a letter to the Speaker of the Parliament, resigning from being members of those standing committee of the Parliament. And they asked the Speaker and his people to do a thorough investigation on the allegations.
I met some of the members, and they have resigned from those standing committees, and they say these allegations are too big for us to continue being members in these committees. We want serious investigations so that this thing can be put into black and white.
When should Tanzanians expect Parliament to initiate this investigation demanded by these members of Parliament about these allegations?
We have different committees in the Parliament, and I believe Speaker and the Parliament in general, they are going to take steps on this, because at this speed of Dr. Magufuli of fighting corruption, one arm of the country cannot be allowed not to adhere to this speed. And I think the members of the Parliament will stand for this, because it is going to ruin the respect people have for the House. This one angle. But there is another angle, you know. I am the spokesperson of the ruling party, and most of the MPs who have been mentioned in this scandal, they are coming from my party. I believe if these allegations also are being proved, I think this party cannot keep quiet. We will take some actions.
Some people are saying in Tanzania that with the speed with which President Magufuli has launched the fight against corruption and put everybody on their toes, this corruption allegations against majority of members of parliament that comes from his party undermines his effort to fight corruption in public institutions. What do you say about such concerns being expressed by Tanzanians?
Of course, they are true concerns. But if no action is taken, then I will second them. But I believe if there is serious report on those allegations, actions will be taken. Even to these allegations, they are serious allegations to the House. They are serious allegations to the members of Parliament, who are supposed to make sure they are walking in the straight line. And today they are alleged to these serious allegations like this. I believe the steps are going to be taken.
Nape Nnauye is Tanzania's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 24th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. The United States has given Cameroon police sophisticated equipment to monitor airports and border crossings as part of continued cooperation in the fight against the terrorist group Boko Haram. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more on this story from Yaoundé.
Cameroonian police showed reporters the new surveillance set up Tuesday at the Yaoundé police headquarters. On screens in this room, officials can monitor movements at airports and border crossings. They can also see images from scanners, then peer into parcels or bags looking for suspicious content.
Les États-Unis d'Amérique vont installer dans nos aéroports.
Cameroon's police chief, Martin Bargangele, says the U.S. is installing these scanning and identification systems in Cameroon airports and at border checkpoints to allow us to trace criminals who attempt to escape or hide among the population. The police chief said for security reasons, he could not give details on the exact technology. The U.S. also gave airport officials equipment to detect explosives, something Cameroonian officials said has been a growing concern. The donation is part of broader U.S. cooperation in the fight against Nigerian-based Boko Haram militants. The U.S. has previously given military equipment to Cameroonian troops fighting the militants in the north. U.S. military advisors are also on the ground there to provide training on how to detect and defuse explosives, among other things. Cameroon was drawn into the Boko Haram conflict when the militants began attacking towns near the Nigerian border in 2013. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
South African President Jacob Zuma is facing an investigation over accusations he gave undue influence to the Gupta family, owners of a multifaceted business empire. The allegations have sparked public fury and renewed calls for the president to step down. But analysts said Zuma has weathered other political blunders in the past and will probably survive this one too. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The revelation by several government ministers and party officials that they were approached by the Guptas for cabinet posts has left many South Africans calling for President Zuma's head. The Secretary General of the ruling ANC party, Gwede Mantashe, has vowed the party will leave no stone unturned in a bid to find out why the Guptas felt they could behave that way.
I came to conclude that it's an arrogance of power. You see, when you think that you have an undue influence in you as a company, you say many things about an organization, you don't respect it, and then you can say anything. I think that is the arrogance of the superlative decree.
Mantashe has not called for Zuma to step down. But this young unemployed South African, Mbongiseni Mbele, echoes the voices of thousands, some within Zuma's own party, who now want him to go.
Zuma must go because of his ill policies, because of his indecision, because of corruption. He has presided over a corrupt government. He has promoted corruption himself.
Zuma was heavily criticized for using $20 million in public funds for improvements at his private home and for his recent firing of Finance Minister Nhlanhla Nene. The firing caused a sharp fall in the rand, wiping millions of dollars off the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. However, analysts say a recent statement by ANC leaders that they have full confidence in Zuma is a sign that the president's grip on power is still tight and strong. Johannesburg-based political analyst Ralph Mateja says the ANC could in theory end Zuma's rule, but notes that Zuma rules the party as well as the country.
It appears that there is no recourse within the ANC against the president. Hence, I don't think this is the end. He's still in charge. And when people are saying that he need to be recalled, I always say to people that, are you expecting the president to recall himself?
However, Mateja says there is no doubt the Gupta scandal has damaged the reputation of Zuma and the party. Professor Lesiba Tefo, political analyst at the University of South Africa, says there are two likely outcomes for the president. Either he goes or he drags the party down with him.
I'm one of those who think it is going to be difficult for him to survive this. If he does, he will go down ultimately with the ANC.
Zuma is currently in the second year of a five-year term that ends in May 2019. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
President Robert Mugabe's cabinet has ordered all foreign-owned companies operating in Zimbabwe to close shop on April 1st if they do not comply with the country's indigenization regulations, requiring them to transfer at least 51% of their shares to black Zimbabweans. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe program reports from Harare.
João told a news conference that the cabinet decision would ensure that the indigenization law was complied with, adding that this provides support measures for the empowerment of black Zimbabweans.
This is a decision that affects all sectors. Companies make their own decisions here. We're leaving this to companies to decide. They must decide that, look, are we going to abide by the law or not? And if I'm a shareholder of a company, I would now be asking my management, I would be asking my board, chairman of the board, why are we not abiding by the law?
Some economists have argued that potential investors are shunning Zimbabwe because of its scary policies, such as the Black Empowerment Regulations. However, João told Studio 7 after the news conference that the country does not require any foreign direct investment.
Foreign direct investment is not the solution to this economy. This argument that says this country is crying for foreign direct investment is not true. Yes, foreign direct investment is something that is required, but what is actually required more in this economy is efficiency, productivity, and higher production levels.
The cabinet's decision, announced by João, was criticized by former chief economist in the finance ministry, Masimba Manyanya, who said it was surprising that that the government had taken such a decision at a time when the International Monetary Fund has just completed a self-monitored program in the country. He added that most black Zimbabweans do not have the capital to venture into top businesses owing to the country's economic meltdown. He said this move would cripple Zimbabwe's ailing economy. Efforts to get a comment from the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries and the Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce were fruitless. The decision to force foreign-owned companies to close shop by April 1st if they do not meet the nation's empowerment regulations also came at a time when the government also ordered all diamond firms that were operating in the Chiadzwa area in Manicaland province to cease operations, rendering thousands of workers jobless. The government said the companies were not properly registered, while some of them were refusing to join a state entity designed to take care of diamond mining activities. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Begin with football. Tanzania upstaged their hosts Chad by a solitary goal in N'Djamena in a 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier on Wednesday. Sao Tome and Principe pipped visitors from Libya 2-1 in Sao Tome as Guinea-Bissau edged Kenya 1-0 in Bissau. Visitors Benin outplayed South Sudan 2-1 in Juba, while hosts Zambia and the Republic of Congo played to a 1-1 stalemate in Ndola. Staying with the Nations Cup qualifiers, Madagascar host the Central African Republic in Antananarivo today, Thursday. The Comoro Islands face visitors Botswana in Mitsumuli. Djibouti is at home to Liberia in Djibouti City, and Ghana welcome Mozambique to Accra. In Namibia, defending champions Ghana outclassed hosts Namibia 8-0 in their biannual Under-17 Four Nations tournament in Namibia's port city of Walvis Bay, some 400 kilometers west of the Namibian capital, Windhoek, on Wednesday. Today, Thursday, Ghana tackle a team from Westphalia in Germany, while Namibia face South Africa. In Brazil, African Under-23 champions Nigeria play their Brazilian peers in a friendly in Espirito Santo, some 700 kilometers north of Rio de Janeiro, today, Thursday. Both teams are gearing up for the Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro in August. Elsewhere, hosts Morocco play Egypt in a second beach soccer encounter in as many days in Casablanca today, Thursday. Turning to hockey, South Africa beat Egypt 2-0 as Zimbabwe edged hosts Namibia 2-1 in the men's contest at the Africa Junior Hockey Championships in Windhoek on Wednesday. South Africa topped the log with 9 points. Egypt and Zimbabwe have 6 points each, and Namibia has 3, while Tanzania has no point. Today, Thursday, Egypt play Zimbabwe as South Africa engage Tanzania. In the women's contest, Namibia face Tanzania as South Africa encounter Zimbabwe. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And here is our listener mail for this Thursday morning, March 24th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. May I please use this medium to call on the Nigerian National Electoral Commission to quickly declare the last Saturday already collected result of Rivers State rerun election, and also give reasons why Nigerians have been witnessing inconclusive activities of the commission since the inception of the current chairman of INEC, Albert Alago, from Obodu Kato Ranch Festival Award in Abaniku local government area of Cross River State, Nigeria. Thank you.
Thank you, listener, for your comment. And that's it for this Thursday, March 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the crew, I'm James Botte in Washington, saying have a lovely day.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modu talks about tuberculosis. Is it making a comeback? What are the current treatments available? For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.